Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. My very special guest today is Tony Tiora, who is one of the candidates running for the 71st Assembly District, which includes not only East County, but a good portion of San Diego County, parts of Riverside County, and Imperial County. And this is an open seat. It's the district that Assemblyman Brian Jones is vacating due to term limits. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Well, it's great to have you back. Listeners, some of you may remember Tony made his announcement of his candidacy last year right here on KNSJ. Now, this race has changed a lot in recent months.
Yes, it has.
Originally, it looked like there were going to be four candidates, and at the last second, the Democrat that was going to run had a medical issue, we're told, and did not get his signatures in time because he was in the hospital. So there are three Republicans that are listed on the ballot. One of them is Randy Vopel, who is the mayor of Santee. Another is Leo Hamill, a jeweler. And he announced, actually, that he has withdrawn his candidacy, but he did it too late to get the name off the ballot. They were already printed, so folks, be aware, if you're going out to vote, there's really only two candidates left in the race now, Mayor Vopel and Tony. So, Tony, tell us a little bit about, what you think is most important here in this race.
Well, there's a big distinction between myself and Randy Vopel. Randy is a 16-year mayor of Santee, and it sounds like he's done some good things for the city of Santee. He's an insurance salesman. I guess he does that besides running the town. I'm an engineer. I work at a bank. I'm a vice president of a bank. I do data work. I'm an author, and I'm also a small business owner. But the big distinction is that Randy is a career politician. He finally got the endorsement by the Republican Party. He's using, obviously, funds that he's raising out of Sacramento. You know, he has like a lobbyist group, it looks like, that's raising him money. Mm-hmm. I'm self-funded. I don't have the same bankroll as Trump does, but I'm putting my own money into this race.
Yeah, I see signs all over town, so you're getting out there. I know you've been out with the boots on the ground approach there, out speaking all over East County. So.
Oh, yeah. I've seen Randy at a few events, but a lot of people tell me that he doesn't even respond to their emails, probably because he's busy as mayor. I don't know what. But I'm all over the place. I travel all over the district trying to get votes.
Yeah. Now, there's an interesting wrinkle that's come up in this race, and that is that somebody, no one seems to know who, put up kind of a hit site about Randy Vopel, and it's called StopRandyVopel.com. For the record, Tony, did you know anything about this?
Well, I know about it now, but people have asked me multiple times of my involvement. I have nothing to do with that site. I have some suspicions that it's probably a Democrat from what I've read, and I've gotten various emails. But that's not the only site. I mean, there's multiple sites. I've actually, I'm pretty good on the internet. There's stuff on there about where he wrote this strange letter to somebody in China, and then there was stuff, there's some YouTube videos. I mean,
let me go through a few of these issues it raises. And I should add, by the way, that we have asked Mayor Vopel multiple times to come on the show to be a guest, to respond to these criticisms that were raised on this site and elsewhere and by his opponents and others. And he has just not responded.
Well, you're not getting any different responses than some of the people that I've spoken to at some of the Republican women's events. He just doesn't respond. I don't think he did it on purpose. I think he's either busy or who knows what.
But. Yeah. Well, one of the things they have on here is there's a tape of him speaking at a Republican function. CRA, it was the...
Yeah, it's the California Republican Association, I think it is. I listened to that tape probably like four or five times, and anybody that listens to that, I think, will really question him as a candidate. I don't think it was professional. I find it hard to believe he got the support of the CRA after making those statements.
Yeah, I actually happened to be at that meeting. I was covering another speaker that was there that night, and for the record, I didn't make the tape, and I have no idea who did either. But at any rate, I can verify that what was on it actually was what he really said. He got up and he talked about being a political insurgent and how he was going to Sacramento for one reason, and that reason was that he was going to be kind of an assassin for the party, basically. He didn't use the word assassin, but he likened it to his Vietnam service, that he was going to go up there and identify the weakest Democrat and help take them out.
I think he's watching. I think he's watching too much television.
We're going to play a little snip of that for you now.
I did two combat tours in Vietnam. I've been trained by the Viet Cong, okay? So I'm not necessarily a Marcus of Queensberry guy. I will go with the law, but anytime I can outmaneuver the enemy, I will. What I'm going to do, a year and a half into the term, if you elect me and endorse me, I'm going to nail and identify the weakest Democrat seat in California. And then we will marshal every Republican insurgent to get rid of that Democrat. And I will do that three times. I promise you, we will eliminate three Democrat seats so that they will never, as long as I'm on watch, have a supermajority. Now, when I walk up the hall to talk to a Democrat after I've killed one of their seats, how much respect do you think I'm going to get? A whole lot. It's going to be Mr. Vopel. Where before that, I was, hey, you little rookie, what do you know? So that's my game plan.
So that's Randy Vopel. That's, well, Mayor Vopel.
Like I said earlier, I think it's nuts.
So, you know, a few other things on this. They posted a copy of a tax lien. He's running as a fiscal conservative, but apparently in the past he's had a tax lien against his own house. I understand that his campaign has been running in the red also. Some other things. You mentioned a letter from someone in China who apparently wrote to him asking for a signed photo as a souvenir. And Mayor Vopel wrote back, I respectfully decline to cooperate in any way with what I consider to be an enemy of the United States. The People's Republic of China is a repressive and evil communist regime that runs a police state. I fought in Vietnam to stop communism and will fight communism until the day I die. Please accept me as a very determined enemy, as I assume you to be. Best capitalist regards, Randy Vopel, Mayor, the Freedom and Human Rights, City of Santee.
It might have been just like one of those corny, you know, letters you get in the mail, somebody asking for money, or, you know, it asked him for a signature as a mayor of a town. Mm-hmm. And I think the appropriate response would have been to ignore it, because he probably should have better things to do than writing kind of crazy crackpot responses to that. And then he used that, I think, as a medium to show how capitalist he was and how anti-communist he was. He sounded like he was still, you know, fighting the Viet Cong. You know, he talks about the Viet Cong all the time, like he was talking about when he says he's fighting the homeless. I mean, he's constantly in this war mode. And, you know, as a politician, I think he needs to be a little bit more professional. He didn't have to respond that way. You know, he's going after a person.
So let's focus on the campaign a little bit here, apart from Mayor Vopel and his rather colorful style. What are some of the key areas in which you might agree with him? You're both Republicans. And what are some of the main areas where you would differ with Mayor Vopel?
Now, I'm assuming that, you know, Vopel is a true conservative, because some people say that they're conservatives, you know, because they just want to get the votes of the conservatives. Yeah. And sometimes what they say is not what they do. So let's assume that he is a true conservative. And if he is, I'm also a conservative. And what I mean by that is I'm a low tax person. I like to see less taxes. I like to see less regulations. I want the free market, as long as it's not doing damage, you know, to be free.
So you're a fiscal conservative.
I'm a fiscal conservative, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How about on the social issues?
Well, on the social issues, I'm a pro-life person. I think Randy says that he is too. But because I'm a libertarian, I don't believe that the government should be forcing my religious views on others. As much as I dislike abortions, politically, you know, the bottom line is I'm pro-choice.
I think the biggest issue, from what I can see, where there's a big difference between you and Mayor Vopel, is on the issue of climate change. Now, Mayor Vopel is a climate change denier. He doesn't believe there is such a thing. He doesn't believe, you know, man has anything to do with it. I recall some years ago when the Al Gore climate change parties were going on, a climate activist group invited him to come to their event, and he wrote back a letter that said, enjoy your wreck the economy party. I like it hot.
Well, you know,
he's still that way.
And it's going to get hotter. So, you know, he's partially right, unfortunately. I do believe that if we're not careful about all the climate regulations, that it can wreck the economy. The economy is important for jobs. But on the flip side, do we not want to protect ourselves from climate change that's destroying the environment? You know, we have a drought. We have floods all over the place. We have countries that are burning up. We have to be prepared. So we have to do it balanced. You know, we should do things. We shouldn't destroy the economy, mm-hmm. but we need to be prepared.
You have a science background. So tell us how that factors into this.
I'm an engineer. I studied electrical engineering at Rutgers, so science is really important to me. I'm a few credits short of a math degree, and I wanted to be a physicist, so I studied a lot of extra physics when I was studying engineering. So, you know, to me, it's about the science. And, you know, people can argue day in and day out what the facts are. The problem is we have millions of dollars being spent on both sides to convince people of lies. And you have to dig through all that to figure out what's really going on. And so a lot of people in my district will also agree with Randy that, you know, there is no problem with the climate, that, you know, they think it's getting cooler. I would respectfully disagree with them that if they look at the science, there are natural cycles, but the natural cycles are minimal, if anything, right now compared to the anthropogenic, or i.e., you know, the human causes of climate change. Some people would argue that, you know, there's not much we can do at this point, so especially with China and other countries putting out all these pollutants. But I think we still need to fight. And I think, you know, we need to try, we need to do things that are balanced and smart. We can't go overboard. We can't allow, you know, overregulation to destroy the economy, but we have to be prepared.
Yeah. What do you think about things like the giant wind and solar projects that we've seen so much of in East County that ostensibly are built to combat climate change and produce some green power, but in some cases they've bulldozed thousands of acres, and at least one case it was a project that didn't even produce anywhere near the wind promised.
This is a perfect example of politicians taking something that sounds like it should be a good idea and destroying it and making it a waste of taxpayer money and destroying people's livelihoods. Because if you think about it, of course people would love to have, you know, wind is a great way to create electricity.
It's all about siting, really, and where you put them.
Right. And so we need to have the local control. We need to have folks locally. And plus, they're not doing good contracts. They don't have enough business people. I'm a business person, and I work at a bank, and I run a few companies. You know, the contract should have stated in there, you get as paid as much as energy as you produce, and there should be clauses to protect the public. You know, maybe we should just pay $250,000 or something to move the people from there if they've destroyed their environment for them and their livelihoods. I mean, I think it's atrocious.
Yeah, good point. If we build a freeway, then they use eminent domain to make sure at least people are paid if their property needs to be taken for the so-called greater
Absolutely.
Good. We're not seeing that on these environmental
Absolutely.
Issues.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about businesses. You've mentioned you have some ideas to help some of the small businesses that are struggling in this economy, and for that matter, what would your approaches be to help the small business community and also those who are living in poverty?
Well, poverty, you know, is a big problem. When you look at the statistics, there's about 23% of the folks living in California live in poverty, which means they really can't afford to live here. Mm-hmm. It's really sad. It has to do with this, most of it has to do with the property and the high rate cost of like rent and property here. And a lot of that has to do with regulation. So I think that we need to do things to cut those regulations to make it cheaper for people to live. As for jobs and things like that, you know, it's not just the government. Government is really not the best way to create jobs, but we need to do things like, we could give tax incentives so a company comes here. It doesn't cost us anything to give somebody a tax incentive. They come in here, say they want to build a factory, and for a couple of years, they don't have to pay taxes. We get people working. They start putting money into the economy. And maybe they don't pay sales tax. Maybe they don't have to pay employee taxes. But then after a couple of years, they do. But the people are getting money that they're spending here.
We've seen so much emphasis on raising the minimum wage as one potential solution. Whether you're for or against that, I don't think anybody thinks that's the total answer. Who wants to be flipping hamburgers your whole life, no matter how much you're paying
for
it?
No, they don't want that. And so I used to be for the minimum wage increase tied to a tax reduction to business, but I just think it's too complicated. And the business folks that I've spoken to in my district are really against it. And I support my business folks in my town and the towns that here in the district of 71. So I'm totally against the minimum wage increase. But
really?
I am for helping those businesses cut like their regulations, encourage more businesses to come here, because we get more companies to come here. Guess what? They'll shop at the little small companies, and everybody will be pulled up.
What about the people, though, that are struggling, those 23% of Californians, higher in some parts of East County? They're living below the poverty level right now, and you know, you can't even rent an apartment on a minimum wage job.
I mean, if you talk to a small business owner, they're the ones that should vote on it, and they should, if you get everybody who's a small business owner and you ask them what they think it should be, and they're going to tell you that they think that they should raise the rates that they think is appropriate to hire people. So you're really asking whether government should get in and force the small business. I'm okay. You know, I know it's going to sound strange, but I'm okay for large businesses. I mean, if you take a company that's profitable here, like Walmart or something like that.
So maybe an exemption for the smallest businesses.
Yeah, I don't think small businesses should have any raise whatsoever in the minimum wage. I'm okay for large companies, like maybe over 50 or over 100 or over 200, but large companies like Walmart. I don't see there's any reason why Walmart should come in, pay people minimum wage, and then have those folks get on benefit programs.
Let's talk about education, because obviously another way out of poverty is education, but increasingly it's become unaffordable. You know, when my brother went to Harvard in the 1970s, it was $1,000 for tuition a year at the finest university in the nation. And now, I mean, you can barely buy textbooks for that. One textbook, my daughter had one textbook at UC that was $500. You know, it's crazy. Do you have any ideas for making higher education more accessible or more affordable for people?
Yes, I do. And you're right about Harvard. I did a stint there, and it cost me like $10,000 a month when I was taking some business classes there. It's absolutely crazy, unaffordable for the average person, education. I think that one of the problems, again, here, and I know a lot of the progressives and folks in my district will disagree with me on this, but I respectfully disagree with them. I think a lot of the problem is government getting involved in education. What they've done is they've made it so that anybody can get a loan. And a lot of these companies, you know, these schools, these internet schools, all kinds of schools, they have a free funding source. They just say, hey, come here and take a class. Whether it's useful or not, just take a class because they got the government paying for it. And then the kid gets stuck with a bill, or the student gets stuck with a bill that's with them for lives, that, you know, because you can't write it off as
a useless degree from some internet.
Exactly. So we got to stop that. So first and foremost, I would stop wasting money on foolish student loans. I would cut those programs. I would work to bring in programs that make sense. For example,
all student loans are just for
No.
Would tighten the standards of which schools get them.
I would immediately tighten the standards in the state of California as a legislator. I have no problem with student loans, but the schools have to prove empirically, mathematically, with some kind of statistics that say, hey, look, you go to my school and you spend $20,000, you're going to get out and you have a 90% chance of getting a job making $45,000 a year or $75,000 or whatever.
So you tie it to the results. How many jobs the students are getting when they get
out. It's kind of like the solar, you know, it's kind of like the wind farms, you know, where you just let them build something and there's no performance, you know, guarantees.
Like Ocotillo, where it's missed the levels it was supposed to produce all 3 years since it's been built, no surprise.
Exactly.
You know, if you looked at the documentation before, there was no reason to believe it was ever going to produce
and
the power promise.
You have to have some kind of, pay in on results. So mm-hmm. I'm also big on trade schools. And it doesn't mean it's just blue collar. You know, folks where I work, we're trying to hire computer engineers. We don't have enough. So, you know, the company wanted to look offshore, you know, India and other places. But I really respect where I work at the bank that I worked at. The manager there, the top guy, said, hey, look, let's hire people from UCSD. And I loved it. And I spearheaded a program to hire kids out of UCSD. We need
good
to.
For you.
And we train those folks, you know, internally at the bank that I work. And that's like vital. So having like trade schools for a computer where someone can go for $10,000 for 6 months and get a degree in like programming and databases or Microsoft C# or something, or if they want to be a plumber or electrician, you know, we need trades where people can get a job now.
Yeah. So maybe some financial aid for trade schools.
Totally, totally support that. And I would not look at that as a tax increase because I'd find a way to cut it. This state is like a big pork belly just flopping around the road. I'm sure there's some pork that we could cut somewhere to offset the cost of giving those student loans.
Yeah. What about health care? That's another controversial issue now. What are your thoughts about that? You know, there seems to be the two camps mostly of people. Well, three camps. I guess there's the people who say Obamacare is great. Don't tell me anything bad about it. There's people who say, well, it's got some problems. Let's try to fix it. And there's people who say, let's just throw it out the window.
You know,
but they don't really offer any alternative other than, I guess, on the left, then you have the people who say they're for the health care for all, the Bernie Sanders crowd. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
I have to admit, you know, I didn't understand it really well, you know, years back when all this. I mean, Hillary was trying to do health care, you know, when her husband was president.
Yeah.
So this has been going on for a long time. My understanding of healthcare comes from my background, from what I've seen, and the people that I speak to. I lived in Japan for a while when I was consulting to the United States military.
Interesting.
And they have single payer there. And I was really surprised at how well it worked there. cheap, inexpensive government health care, and I would say it was on par with the United States, if not better, in certain areas. Yeah. And I found it amazing.
Well, after all, Medi-Cal and the VA, those are, for lack of a better term, socialized medicine. It's sort of a health care for all within those categories, but you have to be old or a veteran to get them.
Right.
The rest of us don't have anything like that.
Just because it works in Japan doesn't mean it'll work here. You know, we have a lot. We have like a lot more lawyers here. We have a lot more insurance companies here fighting for
a piece of the pie.
So I'm not saying that it would, you know, single payer would work the same that it does in Japan. Plus, doctors make less money there. They're not as concerned. I mean, everybody's concerned about money. So we'd have
how much money a doctor makes really be the deciding factor of what kind of a healthcare system we have, or should it be the welfare of the patient?
Well, so that's one thing. I mean, I like single payer in Japan, but what happened recently, I was up in Idlewild. You know, I hadn't been up there, and the town crier, a guy by the name of Marshall, had mentioned in a news article. And I said, you know, that's horrible. I should really go check the town. It's pretty far away. It's up in the northern part of the district. And I met a family up there, a wife and his husband, and they had a little 2-year-old daughter. And I said, so what do you think? What's your big issues? And they said, oh, our business is doing okay, but we're struggling. And I asked them about, like, healthcare and different things. They didn't have health care. I said, why? There's Obamacare. Anybody can get it. And they said, it's not as cheap as you think.
No, it isn't. I mean, I'll say that my premium under Obamacare is $600-something a month for one person. People who are older, you know, it just seemed – and if you're above the level for the subsidies, you know, you're not poor, but you're not wealthy. If you're in that middle class – it can be extremely expensive.
Right. No, I get it.
And they said, for mortgage, you know?
They were telling me the same thing. Yeah. And so Obamacare, it's not what you say. I used to say it's what you do. And, you know, people can say all these things. If you look at the results of what's going on, I don't think Obamacare is that good. The question is, do you throw the baby in the bathwater out? I don't like the insurance companies running our health care. Yeah. I talk to doctors. I really don't like
it. That's sort of like the worst case scenario.
Well, that's what it is now. So, but I don't want to throw it out until we have a viable alternative. And
that's a sensible answer, I think, actually, that for all of its flaws, do we want to go back to the days there's some in Congress saying, let's just go back to letting insurance companies throw people off for pre-existing conditions.
Well, the pre-existing condition, you know, but the problem that a lot of people are going to argue, the real, you know, hardcore conservatives on this, because a lot of people would argue that I'm not being conservative on this, and I have to admit they're probably correct, because it's going to cost this country money. But the conservative part says to me, yeah, but it's going to cost us more money if, you know, hospitals go under because people just go into the emergency room without health care. So if we get more people on health care, the conservative approach is that they can then pay their bills. So it ain't perfect, but I actually think it is the more conservative approach to keep it until we can find something that's better. And we really do need something better.
Yeah, well, virtually every industrialized nation in the world, except for the United States, has some form of, you know, health care for all, universal health care, whatever you want to call that. And they work differently. Some work better than others.
But could argue that a lot of these industrial countries are going bankrupt. So, you know, you have to look at the ones that are fiscally responsible that have health care. I think it can be done.
So find the models that work.
Yes.
And go with those and not the ones that don't work.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. You know, you alluded to the presidential race, but I'd love to ask, what's your take on this year's election where we seem to have candidates who are outside the sort of mainstream party framework who have come forward and are attracting, you know, the biggest crowds, the most support? I'm talking about, of course, Donald Trump on the right and Bernie Sanders on the left. And then we have Hillary Clinton, the establishment candidate, who, for someone with her long credentials, seems to be sort of, you know, struggling to stay in front.
When Rome falls, strange things happen. You know, we're really still the most powerful country in the world. Our economy actually might be number two right now, but militarily we're still number one. And we've got a lot of problems in this country, and people are struggling. The middle class has been slowly falling apart, going from roughly 60% to 50%, and I think it's probably even dropped lower than that. You have over, you know, I think the real unemployment in this country, I don't agree with everything on Trump, but I agree he's probably right. I think it's closer to 20% because we have so many people hurting and struggling, and the 1%, you know, cleaning out, you know, the 99%, you know, for their businesses and whatnot. People are angry, and so, of course.
I think both Trump and Sanders have tapped into that anger in different ways, but people just, they know things aren't right. They know they're struggling. They may look at different solutions, but they're identifying the same problem.
Bernie Sanders has certain, you know, voter bases that would be very similar to Trump. They're angry and they want change. I just don't agree with them You know, I respect a lot of folks. I have some really good friends. I know a lot of people who are Bernie Sanders supporters. Like, you know, I actually know Steve Wozniak. I don't know him that well. We email once in a while. But, you know, I read that, you know, he's a Bernie Sanders supporter. And we got really rich, smart people.
Big high-tech guy.
You know, and I got a lawyer out of Florida.
Wozniak
who's
at Apple, right?
Yeah, Apple. Him and Jobs started Apple. And another friend of mine, Andy, he's out of Florida. You know, owns a big law firm, made a lot of money. But he's a Bernie Sanders supporter. So I'm like, what the heck? I am not. You know, I don't agree with it. I think that socialism, his kind of socialism will actually hurt. It sounds good to a lot of young people that are hurting. I understand why they like Bernie. I'm a conservative, so I tend towards Trump, you know, going to
really
support Trump. I don't agree with about a third of things he says. And I know a lot of voters probably going to say, oh, he's a Trump supporter. How can I? But, you know, if you're a conservative, you can't vote for Hillary. You really can't. And you're not going to vote for Sanders. So who do you vote for? You know, the only other alternative is to go for Libertarian. Some people say, hey, vote for Libertarian Party. I'm a Libertarian at heart.
Yeah, so. I think we're going to see, my prediction has been we're going to see a lot more votes for Libertarians and Greens this election than I think they've ever gotten before, because a lot of people are dissatisfied with who the parties are putting forward, you know?
I agree. I think that my hope is that Trump changes some of his stances and becomes a great president.
Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we are talking with Tony Tiora, one of two candidates still running in the 71st Assembly District, which includes East County, San Diego, and much of Riverside. And
it's up in Riverside, up to Idlewild. It's Lakeside, yeah. Santee, El Cajon, Ramona, Julian. Those
all the way
areas.
Out to Imperial County.
Yes.
And, yeah. As we mentioned at the beginning of the interview, there are three candidates on the ballot, but one of them, Leo Hamel, has dropped out. So it's now Randy Vopel, the mayor of Santee, very conservative, and Tony Tiora, who is running as a more moderate Republican on many issues. Tony, I'm going to give you the final word today.
People have to make a choice, right? And they have a choice between me and Randy Vopel. I'm Tony Tiora and Randy Vopel. The clear distinction is that I am not a career politician. First of all, I'm an engineer, and you know, I've worked in business, and I've run a bunch, mm-hmm. bunch of small businesses. I'm not a special interest funded candidate, took no special interest money. My only special mm-hmm. interest is the people of my district. It's rare that you see a self-funded candidate that I think can do as well as that I'm going to do in this race. And I think that I'm able and capable and will beat Randy Vopel. So if you want somebody in this district who will support the people, 100% the people, not a special interest, and you don't want a career politician, you can vote for Tony Tiora.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thanks, Mayor. Pleasure being here.